Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in an email or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are all archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about habit. And we announced the topic a little ahead of time, and people assume that a habit is a bad thing. And, well, sometimes it is, but sometimes it's something that we've just memorized and we know that we find useful as a grounding point, yeah, as something to leap off from. So, but we're going to be talking about habit within the context of a, well, of what we always talk about, of a dispute, a mediation, an alternative dispute resolution, a seminar, a workshop, any type of getting together of people to make consensus and using mediation principles. So let's do what we often do when we start these shows. Let's define what we mean by habit within our context, within the context of what we do as leaders, really. So, I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Alicia says that habit is action so familiar that it seems like it should always be done that way. Ooh, what a good definition. Action so familiar that it seems like it should always be done that way. Yeah, sometimes we have a habit, especially with leadership, perhaps something that we say at the outset. You know, I have a habit like that. I have certain things that I do at the outset of a mediation that are the same, well, pretty much the same. I mean, the names change, but are basically the same every time I do one. I make an opening statement, for example. It's, I guess it is kind of memorized because I've done it so much, right? I tell people what to expect. I explain how the procedure basically goes, because a lot of people have never been to a mediation before. And I explain that both sides will have a chance to tell me privately what they think when we go to caucus. I explain what that is when we go into a private session with one side or the other. I explain that if I take more time with one side than the other, it's not favoritism. It just means that perhaps there are more questions, or I wanted, or the explanation just took a little longer. I explained about the civility rules, that we're all going to be polite to each other. There'll be no rudeness. Oh, I do the housekeeping stuff. I explain where the bathroom is, yeah. And I explain when we're going to take breaks. I do all that kind of stuff by habit. The next habit that I have is I go around and we introduce each other. Who are you? Yeah. What's your name? I kind of like people to wear name tags. It depends on the situation and whether or not they're truly adverse and whether or not it's a mediation and I'm a third party impartial or not. I know. There's really strong feeling about that, isn't there? But habitually, I ask people to do that. People are asking why. Okay, this is kind of off topic a smidge, but maybe it is a habit also, right? It's an action that I find so familiar that it seems like it should always be done that way. So I think it comes under the rubric of habit, the definition of habit that we're using within our context, because I do have a habit of making people write their name on a name tag. If I know who's coming, we have it printed out. We do. Really nice and big and dark so everybody can see it, right? Interesting question. People asking if it's just the first name. Boy, I think I'm saying it depends twice right in the beginning of the show. You guys say I say that a lot. It's like, it depends. It kind of depends. All right, I do a lot of different kinds of groups. I do some international work. It depends if culturally it's okay to call each other by their first names, right? In the United States, amongst Americans especially, people who've been here a while, it is common to call each other by your first name, even if the parties in the room are somewhat different, like in age or in, well, I suppose we'll call it stature. But it would be, I like to pick one way or another. If I'm not sure, I think about, well, some cultures don't do that. It's considered to be rude. They want an actual title in front of the name. Mm-hmm. And so, this is very, this is a truism. In some cultures and some groups that I've done, I am called Dr. Beller. Dr. Beller, because I have two doctorate degrees. Now, I'm not a medical doctor, and in the United States, it's culturally deemed somewhat pompous to call yourself Dr. Beller, even if you're a medical doctor, but especially if you're not one. I have two law degrees, right? I have a Juris Doctor, and I have a secondary advanced law degree that's a doctorate in tax law and business law. So technically, I'm Dr. Beller in some of these groups, right? Yeah, where they're very formal. And if that's true, then everybody wants to be called by their title. And they like it to be said a lot, right? Not just called doctor, but by their title and their last name. Very important in that case to have name tags, I got to tell you. In the United States, it is more common to have everybody use a first name. If you're not sure when people go around the table and introduce themselves, I usually say, introduce yourself and tell us if you'd like, what you'd like to be called, if you'd like to be called by your first name or your last name, right? And I introduce myself usually as Sue, because I think it makes it more friendly and more convivial, right? Now, if there's a real consensus that people want to be called by their last name, that means they'd like the title too, I can switch. We can decide on that. It's something that we decide on up front. Quite frankly, it is kind of a big deal because it sets the tone of the group. And if people really don't like to be called by their first name or by an abbreviation of their first name, like my real name is Susan, but I introduce myself as Sue, if they really don't like that, they will find it an annoyance. And we don't need an annoyance in the room, right? Hurts the group dynamic. So yes, that which is familiar, that it seems like it seems that it's always, that it should always be done that way. These are things that I do as habit, right? I do the housekeeping things as habit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have habits too. I can see that. Yes. Padmea says it's something you automatically do without thinking. You automatically do it without thinking. Mm-hmm. Yes. Quite a few people are talking about, and thank you for all of your participation, are giving examples of habits that are kind of personal tics, kind of things that you do just because they're like twiddling a pen, yeah, or moving things in a certain way, setting up the desk in a certain way because you like things to the left and to the right and like that. If the habit is something that, or you're talking about participants having these habits too, men especially sometimes pump up and down with a leg. They kind of jiggle a leg. We won't say why, but a lot of people fiddle with something. Yeah, snapping of gum is being volunteered. Yeah, These things are personal habits. Now, if they're a personal habit that is annoying to the other people in the room and you've got the habit, try to break yourself of it. Try not to do it. I actually know a few people. I just don't know what they are. But I've seen people try to break themselves of a habit by putting a note on top of their stuff. It doesn't have to say exactly what it is the note is for, but like a symbolic thing that reminds you not to do the personal habit, right? Not to twiddle something, not to... I once knew somebody who bobbed up and back, kind of in their chair, kind of went up and back, kind of distracting. Yeah. And so they actually had a note not to do that, and they clutched their chair or their desk or something when they had the urge to do it. You see, it can be broken. Those are personal habits, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I have a personal habit. I don't know if it's annoying or not, but I have it. When I am in front of a big group, like being the teacher in a seminar or workshop, right, or doing a speech, I can stand behind a lectern, but if the microphone is on me, on my person, I'm kind of animated. I like to get up on my feet and move around. Now, I make it a conscious effort not to just pace, because pacing, going up and back and up and back on the stage, is annoying. It's distracting, and it keeps you from looking at your audience, right? Which is one of the things I like to do. I like to make eye contact. I like to look like I'm looking at the audience, even if, which is true sometimes, if it's a big stage and there's lots of lights and it's being videotaped, for example, I can't actually see the audience because they're in the dark. I can hear them. They're breathing. No, but I can't literally see them. But I know where they are. I mean, I know where heads are in the seat, right? I make an effort to look like I'm looking at them, right? Even because they'll feel that I am. In the tape, the video, the recording, will, because it's not a tape anymore, is it? Will feel that I am. Yeah. So even, it's kind of a funny thing, but even if you can't actually see your audience, and I do this also, you know, a lot of times we're on Skype. I can see you, but I'm really looking at the screen, but that makes you look straight forward, right? Yeah. So you shouldn't pace up and back and turn your side or your back or something to the audience. It's rude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Padmaya, something you do automatically without thinking. That's the personal ones. That's the housekeeping ones, right? You do it automatically. You don't have to have that on a note. I figure anything that's not on a note card to remember to do is becoming habit. It's just something that you always do at this point, right? Yeah, sometimes, yes, a lot of times habits are good. I always, out of habit, I think, and out of politeness, when we leave, I thank people for being there, right? Yeah. I don't have to have that on my notes to do it. Oh, you've caught me. A lot of people are saying they've seen me do this and I don't have any notes. Well, all right. I have one sheet of paper that usually when I do any kind of a presentation, I have one sheet of paper somewhere on the podium, someplace on the lectern probably, that is just a real small outline for the sequence so I don't forget something. Because sometimes there's questions and things and then I forget something in the progress of it, in the steps. So I just had the steps on there, yeah. Alan and others are saying that habits that are phrases that you repeat over and over until they apply to all situations in your mind. Yeah, I guess that's true. Phrases that you repeat over and over until they apply to all situations in your mind. Yep, you've got to think of each situation as different. You're right. That you're dealing with human beings. You're dealing with issues. You're dealing with learning. That it's all different depending on what's happening. Depending on, well, what the relationship may be between the parties. And like that, you have to modify your habits and your phrases and the things that you always do. But if the habit is really, really the introductory steps and like that, well, that's okay because it's an automatic way of giving the group structure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what habits do we have as leaders? Now that we've decided what a habit is, and we've discussed my habit when I start with leadership, right? And I suppose I do use some little phrases that I always use about timeouts and things like that, and about we're going to the assignments, and you know how you have little things that you always say about don't contact me if you need me, that kind of stuff, yeah. Okay, so what habits do we have as leaders? Michelle says, it's a good point really, that we have a habit as leaders are thinking that we're always in control. Yeah, thinking that we're always in control. That's a good point, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this, and a lot of people are saying that in order to be in control, and in order really to make the group dynamic work, you have to allow respectful disagreement. I'm so proud that a lot of you are using that actual term, Richard and others. Respectful disagreement. Now, you can't let it get out of hand because you are in charge. And you need to have the respect of the group to make it a strong group dynamic, because when you give them an assignment, they have to do it, right? Yeah. And somebody has to be in control of the civility rules, right? And of when we take a break and things like that. Those are leadership issues. And you do need to have that much control over the group. But that doesn't mean that you're a dictator and that you're always right. I mean, you might be, but we have a habit of thinking that. But really, we need to welcome respectful disagreement. Yes, yes. And also, you know, that's why we call the timeouts, and it allows us to talk to our participants, right? Yeah. And it's a valuable act because it tells us something about how they're thinking and what the group is thinking about and, well, how the other participants are thinking, right? These are all very important ideas, very important things to know, because you want to know that your group is in agreement, that your group is, well, yeah, kind of pleased, right? Yeah, that we're all on the same page, that we're fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is all important. This is all something that we need to accommodate, something that we need to know, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's very important to allow respectful, you see the word respectful, because we're under the civility rules too, respectful disagreement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the thing, that we're always in control. Well, we have to look around and see if we are. Mm-hmm. Thomas says we had a habit of leadership to feel that we are always right. Yeah, that we're always right. Well, I'm always right. Oh, no, just kidding. Yeah, we're getting a lot of agreement with that. And, you know, we are always right because we're always flexible. And we always know that our opinion is not the only one, that we are part of the group dynamic. We as leaders do not fight against the group dynamics, as the participants against us. No, we are an integral part of the group dynamic. If we're not woven in seamlessly, then the group dynamic's not going to work. Because ultimately, we're the one that everybody listens to. We're the leader. They look to us for guidance, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So type of leadership. You know, I always say when we start out, sometimes, well, oftentimes, this may be a habit. I always say that in a respectful and civil manner, we always welcome the five W's. The five W questions, we've talked about this before. By the way, prior shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. The five W's, who, what, where, when, and why. Those are all really great open-ended questions. Who, what, where, when, why. Mm-hmm. So that we can get down to business, so that we can get down to consensus, so that we can move forward. If somebody needs something or has something that they wish to bring up, well, we want to get down to the real basics of it, who, what, where, when, and why. Yeah. Yeah, not all at the same time, of course, whichever one applies. I actually use the why, W-H-Y. Why do you feel that way? Who told you that? What's your research? What's your basis for that? Where did you hear it? What did we do? Who, what, where, when? Yeah, when did you learn that? When will it happen? Yeah. See, these are all good questions to get to the bottom of why somebody's got that opinion. Why they think that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is all very important because then we can all decide. Because we know the basis. It's not just out of thin air. It's not just an opinion. It's a really thought-out opinion. Right? Who, what, where, when, and why. Important. Yeah, we're having Ricky and others are talking about kind of habits that we as leaders have just for convenience sake. We always pick the same location because it's convenient to us and we're familiar with it and we know what the facilities are and the amenities and things, right? Yeah. Is that a bad habit? No, I don't know. It depends on the group. A lot of times the group would just as soon have a set location and a set time, like second Tuesday of the month. We're going to get together here. Or the second Tuesday of every week for a month because we don't need to meet. We need to meet more frequently because our time is short. And you pick a central location. In the United States, it's kind of, at least in urban cities, it's kind of important to pick a central location that has parking. That's one of the big considerations, is that there's a place to, and that it's not so exorbitantly high that it's really a financial burden to ask people to do it. You know, sometimes parking around here is $30. That's a chunk of change. It really is. So anyway. So, or on a transit line, good point, on some sort of transportation easily available. Mm-hmm. So the location without asking. Yeah, take the survey. Erica and others, we've got a lot of people are saying that as leaders, we have a habit of making assumptions about the group desires. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are talking about an assumption about the food. And the temperature. And the seating, yes. Yes, yes, yes. And the time of the meeting. And the location of the meeting, right? Yeah. And how long it's going to last, right? We also might make an untrue assumption. Sometimes I do this accidentally. That people have more technology access and skills than they might actually have, right? I try not to do this. And I always say, if you can't do it, come and tell me afterwards and we'll figure it out. We'll see if we can set it up. Because in the United States, people don't like to admit to the group that they don't know how to do something technology-wise. And a lot of times we Skype or conference call, right? And sometimes people don't know how to do that. They don't understand the process, but they don't want to ask because they figure everybody understands it, right? Now, I will do one of two things. When I announce it, like we're going to do Skype, I give two sentences on how to do it. We all understand that. And then we can all nod our heads, and those of us who didn't understand it can go look it up or ask me. And those of us who did understand it feel kind of good that they understood it, right? Right. So I don't assume, as a habit I used to, but now I don't. I don't assume that people know, have ever Skyped before, have ever conference called before. I explain on the conference call that there's going to be an email. I'm going to give you the phone number to call and the code to push in with your phone, dialing your phone, with the pad of your phone, to call into our conference. People don't necessarily know that, and it makes them feel, okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially since I'm going to use one of those platforms. And not call you personally, because quite frankly, there's too many of us. Even when there's like three people, I don't call the people anymore. I use one of those conference call platforms so that you, everybody calls in a number and then punches in the secret code, right? Right. Yeah. Fantabulous. Okay. People are asking about the habits with the location and the food and the temperature and the seating and like that. And what do you do about it? The answer is that you take a survey amongst your participants. Mm-hmm. Where they'd like a location, they have an alternate location that they'd really like better. Mm-hmm. How they feel about the facilities in the room. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, uncomfortable seats will not help the situation. But sometimes people have trouble with poofy seats also, right? Because it's not just the folding chair that might be a problem. My favorite location, and everybody pretty much agrees, is something, well, usually, I know, always is a big word, but I frequently, if I'm the location chooser and I don't have a zillion people, it's not a seminar or a workshop, even a seminar workshop, I can get about 20 people comfortably, 24, if we're all very polite and don't swing too much on our chairs, into a conference room with a big long table that I like that has all office chairs with the arms that kind of adjust. You know what I mean? I've forgotten what brand they are, but they're a nice mesh office chair. You can may rise them up, you can rise them down a little. You know what I mean? I think everybody's comfortable, and I do favor arms because it gives you your personal space, A, and B, sometimes people get a little stiff sitting, right? And this way they can roll back because the thing is on wheels, and use the arms without having to be real obvious about it to get themselves out of the chair. Yeah, it's very, very nice. And sometimes people will scoot back to reach something. You know how that is. If you've got the ability to have your own little rolling mobile unit there because your chair is cool, makes everybody feel kind of important too. And equal. And you know how I feel about that. You know how I feel about equal. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question. Quite a few people are asking me if I make a seating chart, as in people have to sit a certain way. I tend to sit, I know that you think I sit, depending on how long the table is, for the very long table, I either sit at the end or right in the middle. Now, I tend to sit at the end so that everybody can see me really well, right? And also, that's where the, what do they call that, the whiteboard is, the one where you write things down, right, if I'm going to write something down. And, yes, my computer is there. No, I don't like to use a PowerPoint. We've discussed this before. The reason being that if I'm making a PowerPoint presentation, or you are making a PowerPoint presentation as my participant, it's okay, but it ties you to the screen. PowerPoint is really just notes up on the wall, right? Yeah. And I like to be able to be free to listen and to take the conversation wherever we've been led, to be free to really work with it and not get tied into a certain response, a certain type, right? Yeah. So that's just me. I like to sit at the very end. Sometimes I'll sit, unless we have a small group, 8, maybe 10, then I sit in the middle and not at the end where I am far away from the people, right? I sit in the middle because, remember, leaders are team members. We're part of the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, that was just a digression on seating. And no, the answer is I don't usually make a seating chart and make people sit a certain way unless I need to divide up people who are holding side conversations and are not participating because they are so enamored of talking with each other to the exclusion of the group. Mm-hmm. If I need to, I will make a seating arrangement. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes it's true. People are saying that they make a seating arrangement if they need to separate two people who hate each other. Sometimes that happens. It's very weird. It makes for hostility in the group, and we will separate them like small children if they can't behave. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yes, you can do a seating chart. I don't usually. I like to let people sit where they like. Yeah, people have kind of a preference. Mm-hmm. Okay. Left-handed people have a preference too, to be on the end so that they can put their hand out to write. Good point. What other habits do we as leaders have? Samantha and others were saying have a habit of second-guessing ourselves. Mm-hmm. A habit of second-guessing ourselves. This is kind of an Americanism, the expression second-guessing. It means that we kind of lack confidence. And we get something to go a certain way, and then we go, oh, my God, I don't know if that was the right thing. Maybe we should have done it the other way. I'm going to say something to all of you because you are successful leaders and you are leading in a progression to get to a successful outcome. About the second guessing, I'm going to say something very definitive. I'm going to say stop that. You are an excellent leader. The choice has been made. If it is ultimately not the right path because we've explored it and it doesn't seem that we're getting anywhere with it, and it's impeding progress, you will know soon enough. And then you can go back to what was your second choice and say, well, my friends, it's time we tried something else. But a leader who is constantly second-guessing themselves, I see this occasionally with younger people, variants, for example, and I'm afraid I see it with women a lot. They actually stand up in front of the group, and they kind of waver. They kind of second-guess themselves without anybody else second-guessing them for them, right? They kind of go, well, I don't know. Maybe this, but this is good too. No, pick a side, not a side, but pick a path. Think it through very carefully, taking into consideration not only the issues at hand, what needs to be done, and the people. the people who are in your group dynamic, and lead them to a successful outcome. If what you have chosen is turns out to be not the best path, we as a group will modify it. But that's not second-guessing yourself. That's being a strong leader. Yeah. Well, yeah, it is taking control, like we talked about at the very beginning of this show. Yeah. You don't want to take control just for the sake of taking control. But someone has made you the leader. Someone has hired you as a third-party impartial because they have confidence in you. The group voted you in. Whatever makes you the leader is a sign of confidence. Be proud. Own it. Yeah, it's a mighty fine thing. And it's something that people want you to do, the group. You can't make a strong group dynamic if you're not strong, right? Not obstinate, not obnoxious, but a good example of leadership and where we're going. That's what we're looking for. Yeah. Adam and others are saying that sometimes leaders have a habit of forcing the process. I wonder if that's true a lot. I bet it is. That we kind of have a goal in mind, a date by which something needs to be done, maybe an artificial one, because we need to be done with this group so we can go on to the next one, because we've already under contract for it, for example. Yeah. And it is really not, you're forcing the process on them. They can't go that fast. Or they're having trouble getting from one step to the other. Now, you need to lead them forward, but you can't have a habit of forcing the process. Yeah. You need to be flexible in order to make progress. Yeah, sometimes I think we do. We know how it's supposed to go, and we kind of, yeah, it's an interesting point. People are saying that you have kind of a template or a mold, M-O-L-D, and we try to kind of force the group into it because we know it's a process that works, but these people need more flexibility, right? Yeah. They need to be able to talk something out. More so than some groups. Yeah, that happens. Yeah, so we might indeed have a habit of kind of pushing forward in the process, and you have to be certain by listening and by thinking of the individuals that make up the group dynamic and the group dynamic itself that you're ready to go the next step. That we're making it. We're going down the path, and that this is the next one, and this is the next one. And sometimes, you know, the process doesn't have an actual step-by-step with numbers on it. Sometimes you take different parts first, and you throw some parts of the process that you think usually happens out. And like that, the process has a beginning, right, get together, and an end, successful outcome. In between, you got to remember that's not on the list with numbers. It can switch around. And sometimes you don't need all of the pieces because you've got accord, you've got agreement, you've got consensus. Yeah. So, what habits do we see in our participants? Now that we've talked about ourselves, what do we see in our participants as habits? Let's see. This is a really good one. Frey and others are saying that one of the main habits we see in our participants is waiting for others to speak up. Yeah, they're sitting there silently. They're waiting to see how it goes. They're waiting for somebody else to say it, and then they can nod their head. They don't want to be first. They don't want to be too outspoken. They don't want to be taken as a fool, maybe, right? Yeah. Waiting for others to speak up. When I see that a group is doing that, or maybe there's one or two people in the group who really are not saying anything, they're just sitting there and they're nodding their heads occasionally to show that they haven't dozed off. And when I see that, and okay, not the first 5 minutes, because they're the thinkers in the group, right? Yeah, and thinking is good. But when we come to a point at which we need to have an opinion or we need to make a decision, I actually call on them on the assumption that they would really like to say something, but that those of us who are extroverts, and I count myself in this, in fact, I have a habit of trying to lead, and that's a bad habit. I try not to do that when I'm not the leader. It's not my place to take over. No, unless the whole ship is sinking. But you know what I mean? I have a very extroverted personality. I want to give my opinion. I need the timing thing. You know how we talk about in prior shows that everybody in the civility rules gets a certain amount of time to speak, and we use an egg timer and goes bing? I need two egg timers worth. But I don't, because I know I'm going to go bing, right? My time is going to end. The alarm's going to go off. So I really like to participate. Some people are shy, and they have a really good idea, and we'd like to hear it. And even if people are saying some people just kind of sit in the back and don't do much. Even so, we'd like to call on them and see if they have something to say. And sometimes they don't. They just say, well, I'm in agreement with the group. You go, good, hot diggity, good. But you need to give them the ability to make that decision to decide whether or not they'd like to participate, whether or not they'd like to chime in, so to speak. Yeah. So, what other habits do we see in our participants? Uh-oh, I'm going to go past the recipes again, I think. I apologize. We'll try to get one in. But we had such a nice conversation. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. This is a good one that Karen and others are talking about. Sometimes participants have a habit of wanting to talk only to their clique. Yeah, only to the people they came knowing. Only to the people that are the most similar to them in viewpoint, probably, right? They want to only talk to them. That's when I oftentimes do break out the seating arrangement. Yeah. Sometimes I even need to do it right away. I'm not real big on the you two keep whispering together, move to seats at the opposite side of the table. It's kind of uncivil. I really try not to do it, if I can possibly help it. Sometimes you need to get people stop talking only to their clique and talk to the group. I actually ask them to tell us what it is they're talking about every time they make the click. Yeah, I want to know. I want to know what you're talking about, what your opinion is. And you know what? If they're talking about shoes or something, they'll never do it again because it's embarrassing, right? I mean, geez, there we go. Yeah, so wanting to talk only to their own little group. George and others are saying that participants get in the habit where they have trouble progressing because they get stuck in an idea. Trouble progressing because they get stuck on an idea, and they want to keep kind of chewing on it. That's where leadership and explaining about the process comes in. And we make a decision as a group about whatever the issue is, and then we try not to just revisit things constantly if we've already decided on them. And revisiting won't get us any further forward. In fact, sometimes you have to tell somebody that it's very interesting, and we are interested, but we've got to move forward. It doesn't impact this particular successful result. What other kind of habits do our participants have? Suki and others are saying that they have the habit of being comfortable with the sameness and resistant to change. Comfortable with sameness and resistant to change. I think that's probably fair. We feel comfortable. We've got this under control. We know what we're doing. Feel comfortable with sameness and resistant to change. It's a funny way of saying it. Joy and others are saying that habits are contagious. Yeah, they kind of are, aren't they? Habits are contagious amongst the participants. They see something like they can't get stuck on an idea, and then they get stuck on an idea, and they keep circling and circling around. You know, there's a expression. It's probably an Americanism, but we all know what this is. They circle around like a dog chasing his tail. You know how dogs chase their tail and they go round and round and round and round and round and round. And they're not going to catch the darn thing, but they get real determined because that's what they're doing. They want to catch it, and we're going to catch it. But it doesn't get us anywhere, yeah? And if the dog did catch his tail, it would be kind of a bad thing. It would not be a successful outcome, right? Yeah, he'd bite his own tail. That would be bad. Yeah. So, yeah, and sometimes that kind of stuff is contagious. Yeah, people are talking about contagious habits, especially within a team. If the team starts out and it's kind of ineffective, all right, I will indeed use the word. I don't like to be rude to people, but this is just in general. If the team's kind of lazy, right, and the team leader's really lazy and doesn't really pay any attention, that's contagious behavior. That's contagious habit. Because if nobody's pushing you and nobody seems to care much, well, then you're not going to put in the time and effort, now are you? The whole thing's going to become lazy, right? Yeah. So that's efficiency is often contagious. People are saying civility is contagious, yeah? If we all treat each other in a civil manner, it's a much better thing. And that's why we as leaders are good examples. So we've talked about ourselves, the leaders. We've talked about participants, but groups have habits too, don't they? Yeah, groups have habits. We have habits as a group, yeah. What kind of habits does the group have that really affect the group dynamic? Yeah. You know, this is a good point. Kyle and others are saying that leaders should have rituals to create a strong group dynamic. Yeah, something that brings us together, that we like, that we've agreed upon, right? See, a habit isn't necessarily something bad. It's something, could be something unifying, too. Or something that you remember to tell people because it's important. Yeah, yeah. I do think that rituals for a group that you're going to see quite a bit, for example, rituals kind of bring us together, right? Yeah. Okay, I belong to a group that has a strong set of rituals. It's Rotary, right? You've heard me talk about Rotary before, and most of you, in fact, a lot of you seem to be members of Rotary in your area, but Rotary is a service organization that is international. You've all heard of it, and there are clubs. It's made up of clubs that are independent in the sense that they collect their own dues. They do their own good work in their own community, right? And they are all, each club is full of what I would call basically like-minded people. All over the world there are clubs, some big, some small, right? I belong to a very big one. In fact, I believe it's the world's biggest. But Rotary, there's a thing called Rotary International. Each Rotary Club kind of tithes to them, gives them some money out of their dues, and they go, all Rotarians are entitled to do international Rotary things. There's an annual convention, there's all kinds of stuff you can go to. It's not required, which is good because I never go, because I'm involved in my local club. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of water. My voice is going, I got so emotional over Rotary. Hang on. Oh, excuse me. Thank you. But what I'm really telling you is that it is got a headquarters, but each club is kind of autonomous, although they're all Rotarians and they do get together with other Rotarians, right? Right. So Rotary has a set of rituals that all clubs do because they feel it's unifying, right? First of all, they have stuff that you can wear. Every Rotarian gets a pin, a lapel pin, that you can wear to designate yourself as a Rotarian. You're proud. Do I always wear mine? No. But then again, that's just because I know a lot of Rotarians and they know me. I mean, I might, if I wanted people to ask about Rotary and see if they could join, that would be okay. Yeah. So Rotarians wear a pin to identify each other, at least at certain occasions. But you could. You could wear a pin. That's a ritual. Rotarians all sing something patriotic to their country, to maybe even to their club. I don't know. In the United States, we sing a patriotic song to America. Together, we stand up and do it. And Rotary always, as part of their ritual, they have certain things in the room, the Rotary flag and the flag of their country, right? People are saying they have the Rotary wheel. It's a symbol that's in the room somewhere. It is, people are saying it's a cog. It's a wheel. I don't know, they call it the Rotary wheel and the tenets of Rotary, which is the basic vow of all Rotarians. And at least in the ones that I've been to, and I think in all of them, and mine is true, we say a prayer together. Now, it's not to a specific religion, at least not in mine, because we're all kinds of different religions. But it's a unifying ritual. We have been presented a pin, which we might be wearing. A lot of us do. We have name tags that are usually plastic or something that are permanent name tags. We have symbols in the room, which is unifying habit, ritualistic habit. And we do something together that's the same every time we meet, right? Sing a song, say a prayer, do something to unify us. That is habit, and it is ritual, and it is a way to encourage the people, the individuals, to think of themselves as part of the group. It's a group dynamic builder, and I so approve. Now, you can make any kind of ritual you'd like, but that's a good way to create a habit, a strong dynamic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, sometimes you don't have a group that's meeting that often, in fact, frequently you don't, and they don't have a ritual like that. One of the ways, a good habit to get into, is to create a strong group dynamic by creating interest among the participants. People are naturally interested in other people. I certainly am. I like to know everything about everybody. I really do. And the interest relates back to a strong group dynamic. So I like to have an opening question. Not just on our first meeting, but on every meeting. I like this something that we're going to talk about. People like it. They love it, as a matter of fact. Now, do you need everybody to introduce themselves again? Wouldn't hurt, maybe, if it's a big group. How about some name tags? Yes, I suppose that's true. People are saying that if you don't have a good memory for names, you really, really like name tags and have people introduce themselves more than once. You know what? That's true. I'm guilty. I have a really good memory for faces and for the people that I've dealt with. I have a good feel for people, but I do not have a particularly good memory for names. I need to have it reinforced is what it really is. If it's reinforced a few times, I'll do it. But especially if I haven't seen you in a little while, or you're brand new to me. Wow, yeah. And then I'm not sure, right, which one you are, which is kind of awkward because I kind of like to call you by name, but I'm not positive. Name tag's good. I think that's why I like Rotary so much. They have name tags. Oh, no, never mind. So you have some sort of a habit of something fun. Ask a question each time that everybody has to answer. Nothing too personal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, any kind of a question that doesn't have to really do with business. What'd you do over the weekend? Mm-hmm. What'd you do? The 4th of July is coming up, right? Mm-hmm. What was your first pet? What was his name? What was the pet's name? That kind of stuff. Your first job. Uh-huh. People like to talk about that. It's just fun. It lightens the mood. It creates a better group dynamic because people find something in common with the other people, right? Yeah, you tailor it to that. Mm-hmm. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Yeah, that kind of stuff. And then it doesn't take too long because it's a question that can be answered in a reasonable length of time. Not something too deeply emotional that's going to take all day. Yeah, because we want to get around the table and then get back to business. Mm-hmm, yeah. What other habit? I'm Shelley and others. Well, we've got actually two groups of this. Some people say that the group has a habit of following instructions. That would be our groups. And some groups have a habit of not following instructions. Got to get back on track and explain why it's important to follow the instructions. Mm-hmm. And that they're not just arbitrary. And by the way, folks, don't make arbitrary instructions or rules. Yeah, people will know. Mm-hmm. Charles and others are also making a point that groups get in the habit of communicating with their team members, their teams. Yeah, we communicate with each other, but they forget to communicate with the rest of the group, right? There's a little expression about keep them in the loop. Mm-hmm. And maybe an Americanism, it means, and it's of course a global show, but it means make sure everybody knows what's happening. And don't just communicate with your team members. When you've got something to say, tell everybody, right? Because we're all in this together, and we've all got our own teams, and we want to work together. Mm-hmm. In addition to doing our assignments. Mm-hmm. Hussein and others are pointing out that groups get the habit of being a group. And they tend to be unwelcoming to new members, who they regard as outsiders. They get in the habit of being a group. And they tend to be unwelcoming to new members, who they regard as outsiders. Good point, really. Yeah. Sometimes the group gets so good at being a group that they become insular, able to reach out, to welcome anyone else. Because they've habitually gotten along, and they don't want anybody else to kind of make ripples, make waves. Yeah, rock the boat is a kind of an expression that goes with that. They don't want anybody to not be have the experiences with each other that they do, right? Yeah. Ah, my friends, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. We're out of time. I apologize that we will not get to the recipes this time. We will get to them next time, I hope. But we had such a wonderful conversation that we didn't want to stop. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. If you want to connect with us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the prior shows, and there's lots of them, are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.